It's going to be a wild ride. So buckle yourselves in.
Hello and welcome to Stramash, your place for NFL content with a Scottish twist. I am not Cameron Hobbs, nor am I Paul Mitchell. Instead, you have a massive upgrade this week. It's me, Charles Patterson, in the host's chair. Cameron is busy trying out for a gig in the Canadian Football League after his failed audition with all 32 NFL teams, whilst Mitchell is painting his toenails somewhere. And with Gordon pulling a sickie so he can dodge more bad press about the Ravens, I'm joined by the only voices of sense left on this podcast, Jamie Borthwick and Ian Stephen. Good evening, gentlemen.
Good evening.
Can I just say it's incredibly circumspect that 2 days or 1 day after Scotland implements the hate crime bill into law, Paul and Cameron leave the country to escape any prosecution, because let's be honest, they're the two most likely. And the podcast felt that they needed the most PC and family-friendly members in the three of us to be able to put forward a sensible show under a new period of legislation.
Exactly.
When I was in high school, one of my mates' dads went away to New Zealand for the entire summer holidays, and we just had the run of his house for 7 weeks. That, I reckon, this is what the next hour is going to feel like.
It's like an empty, isn't it? It's outstanding. Yeah. Where could it possibly go wrong?
If I was in Cameron's house left alone, I would go in and I would deliberately tinker with all these toilets so they wouldn't work anymore.
I'd drink all his whiskey, because he's got loads of it that he's not giving out to Patreon winners. By the way, if you haven't got your whiskey yet from Cameron, send him an email. Make sure it happens. Just bombard him, because he hasn't kept his admin up to date. So that's another job for him when he gets back from Toronto. Anyway, we do have an agenda tonight, so I'm going to let our listeners in on a little secret. We had a wee post-season meeting recently at Top Golf. Should we reveal the results of Top Golf before we go any further?
I think people will be shocked.
Yeah. So we played, so if you've been to Top Golf, we played two regular games, I think it's fair to say, in terms of points. Some of us did better than others in those. I'm not going to blow my own trumpet, but I think I won one of the games. But the winner of the ultimate game at the end, where you try and knock the angry birds off the castle, was, drum roll, Mr. Ian Stephen.
Or
was that Gordon? Did Gordon win or did you come second? I can't remember.
I hit the most perfect shot ever, and it went right through one of the windows, and I knocked nothing down at all.
Yes. Straight. It was like a Joe Allen, a Josh Allen throw from 2017 that went out the stadium. It was one of those. It was great fun. We had a great time at Top Golf. So thank you very much to the hosts for putting us up as our kind of end of season huddle to reflect on another successful Stramash season. But what we did do at the end of the evening after one of us won, and we can't remember because there was obviously that much alcohol imbibed. And if it was Gordon, sorry, Gordon, but you're not here to defend yourself in terms of your golf record. We drew up a spreadsheet. And I've got this spreadsheet sitting in front of us, and it says, for tonight's episode 269, it says plan, draft. That's quite generic. There's a lot to talk about.
I think, actually, it's a surprise. All patrons are now being signed up to join the Ukrainian army in their fight against Russia. Surprise!
Yes. Well, we did actually get the patrons' help before we sent them off to the front. So we have thrown out to our patrons group essentially the opportunity to set the agenda this evening. What is their biggest question ahead of the upcoming draft at the end of April that needs answered? So we've had some absolutely terrific questions, and let's start with one that's relatively sensible from Lauren Callahan. And I'm going to throw this one to Ian first. Will the Cowboys keep Tyler Smith at left guard and draft a tackle, or will they move him to tackle and draft a guard? What do you think?
I think it kind of depends on how the board falls for the Cowboys, but there looks like there's two or three guys that are going to be round about the Cowboys level that maybe you might describe them as projects that they could take, I mean, they could play, they could switch guard to tackle for a season and ease somebody in. Somebody like maybe Oli Fashinu might drop into their remit. Guy I really like is Amarius Mims, who is basically just a semi-detached house on roller skates.
And I think if he, Georgia, yeah, he's out of Georgia. Yeah. He is a big lad, isn't he?
I think if he was given a season to kind of bed into the NFL before he starts at left tackle, I think he would be sensational for them. It's a big call though for the Cowboys because the kind of clock's ticking on that quarterback project at the Cowboys. The contract, will Dak get one? Will he not? It's kind of pensive for them. And the Eagles have retooled the defensive end. The Redskins.
And Commanders. Commanders.
Commanders, sorry. Redacted. And then the interior of the New York Giants line as well. It's a division where you've got to have quality in that offensive line. Tyler Guyton is also somebody else that could, you could perceive them having. I don't think there's value with the guards unless the Cowboys decide to trade out the first round and the second, maybe pick up picks next year. I don't actually think the Cowboys have got too many picks this year either.
They've been so quiet, haven't they, in free agency as well, because they've got this great dilemma about the Dak contract. And obviously they've got to pay CeeDee Lamb and they've got to pay Micah Parsons. And so they're in this bind, as you said. This is, you know, the clock's ticking. They're in this quandary about what to do. If you, Jamie, from the point of view of a New York Giants fan whose team conceded, I think, 85 sacks last season, if you saw Dallas retooling at that position, that's not exactly going to fill you with much optimism, is it? Because they're going to be strong whoever they draft.
No, I think you come to understand that Dallas have got a very good O-line and they have done for a number of years, and it's something that quite rightly is the way that they build their team. They build from the inside to out. I've got two other names that I think they could probably look at in the first. They could look at Graham Barton, the left tackle from Duke, who is maybe undersized coming into the league at 6'5" to play left tackle. However, he's got the... he's got the instincts and he's got the athleticism to do it. He could kick into guard and therefore you hedge your bets. And, you've got a guy who could play tackle, who could play guard. And if they're looking for a real athletic, physical freak that could be shaped into an absolutely outstanding tackle, Kingsley Suamataya is going to be a name that comes up a lot as someone that's probably developmental, but if you get it right, it could be a game changer.
You pronounced that really well.
Oh, I've been working on it, yeah.
You should be the host of this podcast. Suamataya
and Amagaji. They're my two guys.
You're a what?
Amagaji. Kieran Amagaji. He's another...
That's another pure Edinburgh, tackles. That, isn't it? My goodness.
Amagaji. I don't care how you... I've not looked up how you actually say it. It's Amagaji.
Yeah, we'll get on to pronunciations in a minute. while we're on the subject of tackles, a question from Kenny, the Packers fan. Is Joe Alt worth trading up for? What do you think about that?
I'm not sure where the market would be.
From 32, yes. From 2, no.
I mean, at the moment, he's what, predicted to go top 7, top 8? If you think that maybe the top 3 or 4 maybe quarterbacks, and then you've got Marvin Harrison Jr., maybe Malik Nabers, he's likely to be the first tackle off the board. But
you could be the cat amongst the pigeons. A team that is slightly further back is going to see so many teams jostling to get up there to get their quarterback or to get one of these major wide receiver talents, and someone goes, you know what, we need Joe Alt and we're going to jump in there, because I think the Titans are sitting there going, yes, we're just going to sit tight and wait for him to fall to 7 for us.
He strikes me like Penny Sewell from a couple of years ago, whereby he's almost like a can't miss project, and it's like if he falls to you and you need a tackle, it's like there's your bookend, boom. So you do wonder whether there's a team that's wavering there. It would have been the kind of player that if the Jets hadn't traded for Tyron Smith, then actually that you could have seen them going up for him. But
I think one of the key things, and it's one of the members of our podcast, Paul Mitchell, he always espouses genetics. He does it in a different way. He likes measuring craniums. But the genetics play such a key role in the NFL, because Joe Alt's got that NFL genetics. Marvin Harrison Jr. has got that genetics. Teams look at these players and don't. You look at the Watt brothers, you look at the Matthews family, you look at the Manning family. These guys tend to be players that you don't miss on when you pick them in the NFL. They're not as much of a gamble. They know how to fit into an NFL culture because of their family members, and they've also got the actual physical genetics to be able to cope with an NFL season. And Alt might be one of those guys who is can't miss because of that. And you could see teams thinking, well, you know what, a GM doesn't want to lose his job by drafting a bum, so he's going to go for somebody who is near enough guaranteed he's going to be a good player for that franchise.
Here's one from our friend Mr. Johnny Bailey. Who will be the biggest bust in this year's draft? Presumably he wants it to be a Ravens pick. You could argue that the Steelers pick in the first round a couple of years ago has turned into a bit of a bust. Who are we looking at?
Has he answered his own question by saying it will be a quarterback? Because there's no bigger disaster for a franchise than not getting the right
it's
quarterback.
It's got to be one of the top four picks. So if you look at... Surely if you look at drafts over the last 5 to 10 years and the number of quarterbacks that are taken in the top 10, top five, pretty much with every draft, I mean, especially if the Jets are drafting a quarterback, you get somebody who just tanks, whether it's Sam Darnold, although, you know, he's getting another shot this year, whether it's Zach Wilson, whether it's Josh Rosen, it's always going to be a quarterback. So if we look at the fact that if we take the top four quarterbacks, Caleb Williams, Jaden Daniels, Drake May, and JJ McCarthy, who could be the 1, 2, 3, 4, the odds are that one of them, possibly two of them, is going to be a dud, isn't there?
Listen, I've just had a conversation with a gentleman who sacked the fastest ever quarterback to play in the NFL in the AFC Championship game. So if he knows anything about dissecting quarterbacks, it's this gentleman, Hollis Thomas, and he said, be very, very wary of Caleb Williams. You can hear more of what he said in an interview on this podcast, but Hollis said, because of his dad, because of the things his dad said, be very, very wary about picking Caleb Williams number one overall. And how many times has that happened? The guys, oh, you can't miss it, number one. Tim Couch can't miss it, number one. And it turns out he's nowhere near ready to play for an NFL franchise. Number two, Donovan McNabb. Number five, Dante Culpepper. Those should have been the guys they went for. There's no guarantee that Caleb Williams, and Charles would be delighted, no guarantee that Caleb Williams is going to be the franchise quarterback that the Bears want. It's like a game of blackjack. You've been given a hand of 16 and you're now calculating in your head what the odds are of you being able to beat the dealer. That's what they've been given, a hand of 16, right? Mm. But they might end up getting somebody plays them by 10 of hearts and that's it, they're bust. They don't know what's going to happen. So there is by no... He would be the biggest bust, guaranteed, but it will be one of those 3 to 4 quarterbacks coming out in the first round that is going to be the bust, that's going to be the biggest surprise, I think.
Jamie, does it give you the fear of the possibility that the Giants might decide to trade up and try and go for one of these quarterbacks?
They're not that stupid. They're not that stupid.
Oh, I don't know.
Oh, no, that's stupid.
It does give me the fear because, yeah, like you say, absolutely nothing is a sure thing. I'm fascinated and horrified by the climb that JJ McCarthy has made up these boards and the apparent clamour.
There's one thing that's a sure thing. There's one thing that's a sure thing. Paul complaining about traffic.
And then being booed.
It's entirely justifiable
if you live in Edinburgh. That just happens.
When you were successful, though, you'd Sims and Hostetler. They always had that kind of pressure that was on them. When Manning was selected, he was picked. He was first overall, I think. But
first overall and then traded to the Giants.
He was compared to his brother all the time. So the Giants have never had that elite kind of golden boy quarterback. They've always had the questions. And if they did that, if they drafted up to take pick McCarthy, he's going to have those same questions. He's not going to be the golden boy like Williams. Should you just say, well, we're not going to play with a quarterback, we're going to play with two running backs in every single snap. reinvent football. This is Giants football.
I've on the Giants. I've said I think that they don't want to miss one of these wide receivers because they haven't had a proper WR1 since Odell Beckham, and this is their chance to go and take one. If they can get back in either at the end of the first or jump up early in the second and get someone who's remaining, I think Bo Nix is probably the name that they would look at that point. I think that is their perfect day one into day two scenario. But of course, the problem is you can't tell what everyone else is going to do. So I think it's a very solid start for them if they just go and take Malik Nabers or Roma Dunze or Marvin Harrison Jr. if he's there, but he's probably not going to be. And then you have your WR1, you have your target, and you finally replace the fact that you have no significant skill players left on the roster. And then you take it from there.
And can we talk about Bo Nix?
Yeah, absolutely. But, I mean, this is a guy we don't know where he's going to land, but it could be anywhere in the first or in the second round. He could go
anywhere from 12, I think, into the tail end of the second round. I really don't know.
First of all, he sounds like a manufacturer of squash rackets.
He sounds like a chocolate bar to me.
I would say 22 to 24 of the teams in the NFL would love to have Kirk Cousins as their starting quarterback, especially over the body of work he's put in over the last 5-10 years. Bo Nix is Kirk Cousins. He is the guy that's going to come in into a very restrained system, something like they've got in San Francisco or what he had in the Vikings. He's going to be able to find his top targets. He's going to be able to read defenses, get the ball out of his hands. Bo Nix is going to be in the NFL in the next 10 years, I think, near enough guaranteed. The only question about Nix is the fact he's old, coming out 25. Teams might not like that because it reduces the amount of time they would have him in the franchise. Look at Drew Brees. Drew Brees didn't have any sort of physical talent coming out of college. Just like Bo Nix, the people kind of poo-pooing his arm. He's slightly smaller, but Drew Brees goes down. Don't let Paul know we said this, but Drew Brees goes down as one of the greatest of all time. So I think Nix is going to be the player that fits into that bracket.
Sounds to me like the kind of guy that, if you're the Saints, actually you wait and you see if he slides. He's the kind of player that you might be able to pick up. And then,
they don't have any cap room. They can't sign anyone. Mm-hmm. They can't sign any rookies. They're going to have to play with these players for the next 20 years.
Even though they've got no decent players, there's still £5 million over the cap. It's unbelievable. You know what? It was preempting the next question. Who will the Vikings trade up with to pick the next Kirk Cousins? That's from Mark. And we talk about Cousins as maybe the biggest move of the offseason, going to Atlanta. And the Vikings have got now two first-round picks that they can jump up. Which quarterback for them, let's say that the highest they can probably go is 3, and if we would assume that Caleb Williams is going to be pick number 1, which of the 3 quarterbacks that we've just discussed as potential busts would Minnesota be most happy with? Which one would they be targeting? Daniels, May, or McCarthy?
Personally, I'd want May out of that 3. But I think probably Washington take him at 2, or they probably should anyway. I think they target 3. I think they try and get up to 3 because I think New England's will be amenable to picking up the phone, knowing what the Vikings have to offer. And if they get in a 3, then personally, I think Jaden Daniels, because I'm just still very sceptical about JJ McCarthy, not in general, but that high.
I think Jared Myers being bluffing really heavily by saying, yeah, we're going to be picking up a quarterback at number 3. I think his general manager's been going, shh, no.
There's enough teams out there that want to take that pick. That's the thing. You get closer and closer to draft day, the price just goes up and up. And yet, you know, I mean, if you're a New England fan, do you want to be sitting there with Jake Brissett as your quarterback for another year? I think, Christ,
that could be Brissett.
Yeah, the problem is you've been given X amount of currency, but it's not how much currency you have, it's what you spend it on. Mm-hmm. And if all the top talent has then drifted off the board and you've went, we've picked up an extra first round pick, but we've dropped down, and you don't end up picking anybody that's any good, then it's a futile move. And if you're a franchise that has a general manager or a coach that's on the hot seat, you're drafting an impact piece. You do not have the luxury of being able to slide down the draft and pick up extra picks. because you'll be gone in a year if it doesn't work out. And it's difficult to see. I mean, could it be a case of nobody decides to trade and they're just left with these two picks? They're going to have to pick two players in the first round.
Yeah, that would be quite funny, especially from and it's like a player at number 11 in the ether who,
if nobody trades, I think JJ McCarthy makes it to 11.
Do you think? I think. Well, So what if the top two are going to go as quarterbacks, and then do you think if the Patriots sit at three and don't trade out, do they take a quarterback? You'd think they would probably have to.
Mm-hmm.
Arizona at four, they don't need a quarterback. They're picking Marvin Harrison, so JJ begins to slide. The Chargers don't need a quarterback. Would the Giants take him at six?
I'm not sure if they would.
No,
I'm not sure if they would.
If they took him over Malik Nabers, you'd go and throw yourself off a.
I'd wake up, look at my phone, and go, oh dear.
Well, Atlanta are in a situation where their quarterback won't last forever. Kirk Cousins is coming off a bad injury.
Mm.
Maybe Atlanta pick a quarterback to sit behind Cousins for a year and learn. It's possible.
They may
throw a spanner in the works. Maybe the Minnesota get panicked by that, and maybe they try and make a deal with Tennessee. Tennessee only drops down four positions. I do think though that Minnesota are not just giving up 11. And what was the other one? 23.
Four.
They may have to give up either a one or a two next year as well to be able to go up.
Yeah.
If it's a quarterback they're targeting, then the value accelerates.
It would be highly amusing if they did all this work to get two first-round picks and ended up starting with Sam Darnold and going the whole season with him. That would make my life extremely enjoyable. But anyway, we'll see. We'll see how we go. Right, one more sensible question and then the fun one, which I've been waiting for. Kenny, the Packer, one more time. When will the first running back be drafted and who's it going to be?
Ooh.
That's a good question.
Yeah, it's actually a good question, Kenny. Well done. We didn't actually think that we would talk about anything other than quarterbacks. But is it fair to say that there's a pretty good chance we're not going to see a running back in the first round?
I think we will.
You think? Who would go for a running back in the first round? I mean, I'm looking at the teams at the bottom end of the draft. Maybe Arizona. But Dallas? No. There's not that many there that need a running back as such.
Maybe the depth of the O-line.
Gordon would be rubbing his hands if a running back's taken in the first round. He would be lining up 20 minutes of castigating said team for wasting their pick.
I think teams will be looking at taking defensive end or one of the defensive tackles once you get down to that bottom part of the draft, and I don't think the value is there with the running back. You're looking at bottom of the second. I know who I would take. However, a team would agree is a completely different thing. My favourite running back is definitely Trey Benson. But Jonathan Brooks and Jalen Wright, maybe a bit faster, maybe a bit splashier. Mm.
How about Blake Corum to the Chargers? Jim Harbaugh goes and gets his old Michigan boy.
At the top of the second round.
I think Jim Harbaugh realizes that Blake Corum might not last very long because of his injury and he doesn't go anywhere near him.
Yeah, because he flogged him.
I think
the Chargers are maybe not Blake Corum. I think the Chargers are ripe to go first for a running back, though.
Well, I mean, at the moment, they've got Gus Edwards in the running back room. That's not going to get you very far, unfortunately. We've talked so much on this forum about the devaluing of the position, but actually, it doesn't mean that there's not going to be top quality players out there in days two and three.
Mm.
I mean, for talking sake, I look at what Green Bay did 4 or 5 years ago, actually a little bit longer than that now, and they drafted Jamal Williams in round four and Aaron Jones in round five, and look what happened. And they had terrific.
Nothing. You didn't win a Super Bowl.
Yeah, well, but they've had terrific service over both of them. They haven't won a Super Bowl yet, but then that's There's a whole manner of shit that's happened around that. But ultimately, you can have a really good functioning running game without drafting that high. And look, you know, Bijan Robinson last year drafted 8, drafted 7, completely, frankly, well, pissed away as a talent thus far. So, you know, there's clearly not a star power name in there, but I think you're probably right. I think the Chargers are a good. I could see the Cowboys drafting a running back early.
I think two of the fan favourites are going to be Audric Estemi and Braylon Allen, because they're just big, massive bulls, and fans love it when you've got a huge running back that just battles people out the way.
Right. Here is the best question of the Patreon's group tonight by a country mile. Which player that is draft eligible this year has the hardest name for Cameron to pronounce? That's from Kieran. Kieran, thank you for that. Absolutely inundated with replies to this as well. So here's one for you. Rookie or Horohoro? Who's he?
Clemson.
Well, I hope so. What was the name? Amagaji. Is that the one you said? Kieran Amagaji.
Yeah.
That's a belter.
I think it's Kieran Amagaji. Yeah.
Kieran Amagaji. Kingsley Sumataya.
Kingsley Sumataya. Yeah.
Sumataya. Someone's put Chris Akabusi, but I think that was just a joke. I mean, even in the first round, there's a...
Can you imagine NFL UK if Chris Akabusi actually made it onto an NFL roster?
That would be outstanding. I mean, there's enough people with normal names. I mean, Roma Dunze, you'd think is pretty straightforward, but I can just imagine that one's going to go sideways.
Kingsley Aguacon.
Malachi Corley. Lad McConkey. Jatavian Sanders. Oh, dear.
The Deatric Griffin.
Taliese Fuaga. Oh, my. Yeah, the two offensive tackles, Fuaga and Fashanu. I mean, that's Cameron's going to be in bits after this.
We say Fashanu because of John Fashanu of Gladiators, and Justin, his striker,
Hearts legend.
Hearts legend. It was months of incredible service, but every time I've heard it said by people over in the States, they say Fashanu.
Right.
I've messaged you the name. This will be the name that destroys Cameron if he gets drafted out of Liberty.
Okay. It's not the guy that's named after a drink, Kool-Aid McKinstry. I mean, who names their child Kool-Aid? Seriously. I mean, what was the thought process behind that when you went down to the registry office?
Somebody that works in marketing. It's a perfect brand endorsement.
Yeah, there's some absolute belters.
Zion Tupuola Fatui.
Yeah, no, that I think that's a high. That's definitely high quality Cameron feel, that one.
The one that I've messaged, it's in the meeting chat of Zoom.
Oh right, okay.
If you want to try and read it out, Charles?
Let me go. Here we go. What? Right. Exovia Gadlin. Is it Exovia? Xavier? Exovia? Yeah.
I have no idea.
Sylvia Gadlin.
I mean, that would get you about 700 points in Scrabble. X'Zauvea. Answers on a postcard, please. Well, anyway, well, I can't wait to a future episode ahead of the draft when we are planning to do something very special. And Cameron running through the first round, trying to pronounce the names on the spot. That will be certainly something that I'm sure everyone will look forward to. I am not going to make any confessions about having to pronounce names properly on this pod because I'm just the temporary host.
When we do our mock draft episode, we'll just have to put our picks in the chat and Cameron will have to read them out in the style of Roger Goodell.
Why is everybody booing him?
Yes.
Excellent. Okay, let's get on to some of the news. And I guess the biggest story of the off-season so far, maybe around kickoff rules. Right. Are we going to discuss the kickoff rules and try and explain them properly? As opposed to explaining them in a really poncy way, like Gordon would do, because he's the only one that actually knows the rules.
I'm not going to explain them properly, but basically, the kicker's going to boot it over the heads of all his boys and all the other boys to one or two guys who can catch it. And from the moment it's caught, the two teams then go at it, trying to create space. So rather than having the kicking team's players run in line with the kicker, they'll actually be standing in front and they have to stand still on a line. And then I think there's a 10-yard gap and they're standing facing off British Bulldog style with the receiving team, and no one can move until the ball's caught.
And one of the things I was thinking about this, you can still, if you're the kicker, boot it out the end zone. There's nothing to stop you doing that. But they're going to move, if that was to happen and it was a touchback, it starts at the 35, I think now. Is that right?
Yeah, starts at thirty-five.
As opposed to the 25.
Yes.
So there's an extra 10 yards up the field if you do boot it into touchback. So the onus is on the kicker to keep the ball in play.
Yeah, and you can have two guys in the kind of, I think they call it like the receiving zone or whatever. Two guys who can catch it and return it, which leaves it open to interesting lateral type special plays. Which I think is what we've seen a fair bit in the XFL, where this has been de rigueur for a while.
This is going to be carnage, isn't it?
Hope so.
I used to play on the kickoff team, and it was basically akin to a 3-year-old that had just learned how to run, and I had a great time just running 30 yards and then not doing anything. I didn't
Could you
even
not just
gauge any.
indiscriminately knock people over because nobody was watching you? They were watching at the kick returner.
I would look at the sideline like, "Oh, my friends, look at me, I'm running." So,
So, I guess if you're on the kicking team, you've got less far to run. So that's a good thing.
yep.
But if you're on the receiving team and you're a blocker, the guys are right in your face, but you can just get right into it straight away,
Yeah,
pretty
but
much.
the kicking team doesn't have the momentum on you. They don't have the big run up on you to get through you. So it's a lot more even in terms of where you're blocking, where you're attempting to get through. And I think a lot more space will open up as a result.
You would imagine that there'll be more touchdowns, there'll be more big plays off the
Yeah.
kick. Theoretically, and I guess because initially at the start of the season, it's going to be more difficult to defend this as opposed to anything else. I think it's fascinating. And
We need
perhaps,
Gordon.
yeah, we need Gordon. Gordon understands it, and Gordon's sanctimonious enough that he'll be able to explain exactly what's going to happen in week one to approximately 75% of all of the kickoffs, because PFF will have already done their stats on how many touchdowns there's going to be. So I look forward to next week's episode when I'm not here and you can listen to Gordon explain the real new rules of the kickoff. But hey, it'll be exciting. And I guess coming on to the next thing that we're going to talk about, a player like Lewis Rees-Zammit could profit from this. So we haven't spoken since he signed with the Chiefs, obviously through the International Pathway Program. He signed a 3-year contract, I believe, with some guaranteed money. Is he going to be a success? Do we think that he could be a decent fit in the NFL?
Define success. Is success getting a regular season snap? I
I think
think
probably
I
is.
would argue that that would be a massive success.
I've never seen him play. I have no idea whatsoever.
He looks like Cristiano Ronaldo, except he runs up the ring for Wales. That's basically
Yeah.
it.
He's big and fast. He's very elusive, and he's not a stranger to the game. In that he's grown up, his dad played it all the way through his childhood, so he has grown up watching it, playing it. But obviously, the speed of NFL is going to be interesting. But I think what he has the advantage in is that he's played Lions tours, he's played World Cups, he's played Six Nations. Pressure, the crowds, everything that goes around a big match day, none of that is going to faze him whatsoever. So it's a matter of how are you going to react to the first time you're fully padded up and one of these NFL caliber defenders annihilates you? You know, how quickly are you going to be able to learn where that's coming from? But I think he has the tools and he probably has the mentality to actually go out and do this.
Yeah, it helps he's coming from that environment where he's played for Wales, he's played for the Lions. He's probably, you know, the weirdest thing will be when he gets trash-talked by some special teams guy on the other side and doesn't understand a word that they're saying. But I think it's fascinating that actually with these new kickoff rules coming into play, that's the kind of thing where you could see him being utilized, maybe in a preseason game. It'll be interesting to see what the special teams coordinators come up with in preseason with all these different trick plays that are undoubtedly going to come out of this. But if there's a player that is quite happy taking a backwards pass, then it's him. So, you know, I mean, the thing I always despair about with watching the NFL is a lot of players, they don't do more of the laterals, to be honest. Because of the, you know, the risk reward element is fair enough, but it's not that difficult, really, when you think about it, and if you do a bit of training.
One thing that I think is quite interesting, I know they're kind of talking about, you've got the development pathway, and I know there's a lot of players coming in through Nigeria, a lot of work done by OC over there. When Jonah Lumu burst in the scene in the Rugby World Cup, was it 1991? That was the first time they really kind of mooted the possibility of a rugby player making it into the NFL. Before then, rugby was kind of public school boys, slight punch, maybe they're a farmer in spare time, like Jim Jeffries.
John Jeffrey.
But now, you probably put a rugby player and an NFL player side by side and you wouldn't be able to tell the difference if they weren't wearing the pads. I think the room for crossovers is huge. And you look at the boy that plays in the wing for Scotland.
Doohan.
Yeah, I don't think there's a freak of nature like him in the NFL, to be perfectly honest, somebody that size, that fast. And it may just come down to how much money that they can offer. The first player that really breaks through from that kind of speed element of rugby that isn't just a gimmick, that could become a bona fide starter. Once he breaks in, then the college football might take a bit of a backseat to rugby in terms of bleeding talent in the NFL.
Yeah, and it's a problem for rugby because of the money issues that the sport's got, and obviously the injury issues, the concussion concerns. The one thing you will say about the NFL is that they have never covered themselves in glory on that front, but at least there is that protection and that duty of care that's being considered there, whereas I think rugby's still got some way to go to actually catch up with that. So, I mean, if you look at what Rhys Zammit's going to earn just for being on the practice squad, it's a bit of a no-brainer, isn't it? You know, if you feel that you can make it.
What's the highest salary in rugby, Jamie?
Highest salary in rugby is about 1.2, 1.3 million a year.
So, I mean, that's no contest. You look at the endorsements as well. Can you imagine having a cute, plummy English accent and having American companies desperate for you to voice their insurance commercials?
Yeah. So the highest payers, I mean, France is paying well, but the highest individual paid players are in Japan, which is emerging market throwing money at big names to try and big up their league. And it's basically like it's a bunch of former All Blacks, some French, some South Africans who are going over there, but they're sort of out of the public eye. When you go to the NFL, you're earning that almost as a minimum, and you can look at the press that Lewis Rees-Zammit is getting, what Charlie Smith even is getting going from Gaelic football.
I was going to mention him as well.
Yeah.
Signed with the Saints, was a kicker for 3 years.
The Scottish Claymores, what was the first thing they did to promote interest in the Scottish Claymores? What was their biggest PR stunt?
Big Gav.
Gavin Hastings. And look at the interest. So if you were wanting to launch in France and you could end up signing one of the big French rugby union players, or in Italy, or you want to go to Australia or New Zealand, those are the guys that, if you have them on an NFL roster, the amount of interest would be massive. America wants money, and their market is basically America. They don't make TV money out with Sky. They probably pay Sky Sports to show the games. They used to at times when the rumor was, Charles, I don't know if you can confirm that.
I couldn't possibly comment on rumors, but there might have been an element of truth there. I don't think there's any question that that would have been a consideration. Well, listen, good luck to Charlie Smythe and to Lewis Rees-Zammit. And I mean, from the point of view of the popularity of the game in this side of the Atlantic, I mean, it'd be amazing if we see both of them competing in the league in the coming seasons. But you know, we've obviously had, we've been fortunate with Jamie Gillen and David Ajabo and Lawrence Tynes to have that kind of Scottish presence there. It'd be great to have a Welsh presence and Irish presence in the NFL, and more European influence means more interest in spreading the game far and wide, I guess. So I think it's fascinating to see what happens. And hey, listen, if Kansas City Chiefs receivers continually do themselves out of a gig by doing daft stuff off the field, then Rees-Zammit might be getting a gig sooner than we think.
One thing's on a slight tangent, but I think it's still relevant. The WWE announcing they're coming to Scotland with one of their pay-per-views now. And that's, I know it's kind of not the same sport, it's kind of entertainment, but for Scotland to be able to host an event like that, it will show to the NFL, listen, we can do it, we can deal with this, bring over the NFL to Scotland, because ultimately that's what we want. We want to see an NFL game in Scotland. I think we deserve it.
Too right.
Yeah. Unfortunately, there's a big queue. So that's the problem we've got. So we've got Taylor Swift coming this summer. So that's step one of the master plan.
She's not coming at the same time as the Euros, is she? Because if she is, Gordon's got a huge dilemma.
Week before.
He'll still be hoarse.
He'll be staked outside a hotel.
Sorry, we're gonna get Travis Kelce in the Diggers for a pint.
There's talk that WrestleMania have been chasing after Jason Kelce to get him on the show.
Oh, brilliant!
So they've just announced, WWE have just announced a gig at the Hydro. They're going to be doing a show at the Hydro this year.
Yeah.
There you go. Wouldn't it be funny if it was the same weekend that Taylor Swift's playing at Murrayfield?
I think it is.
Travis, get the Queen Street Express through. Get the train out to get the subway out to the Hydro. Come on, easy peasy.
You're joking, Charles, but I think it is actually roughly about the same.
I was reading this up before we recorded. That'd be fantastic.
15th of June. That's a week after.
Isn't that the night that Scotland played Germany?
Night after.
Oh, is it?
After, so yeah.
Sorry. That's the night that Scotland play Australia at the T20 Cricket World Cup. There's a plug for you. That's a far more exciting prospect than Scotland-Germany.
Is this the first World Cup we've qualified for in quite a long time?
No, Scotland were at the T20 World Cup in 2022, but this time we get to play England and Australia, so...
I remember it kept raining whenever we played in playoffs and they didn't let us in the World Cup.
Yes, that happens quite a lot. That's what happens with being Scottish. And if you've been watching the weather in the country this week, that kind of sums it all up. So, but hopefully there'll be no rain in Antigua or St. Lucia or Barbados, which is where I will be watching and recording podcasts throughout most of June. So
people who listen to the podcast will also know that Charles will be visiting these islands, which are also tax-free
tax havens. Yes. It was Cameron who got done for tax fraud on the last podcast. I'm not going to hold my hands up to anything at this moment in time. But anyway, anything else that we want to say that's borderline illegal before we sign off for tonight? I think we're just about done. So. No. Carson Vance has signed for the Chiefs. Lucky them.
Oh, brilliant.
How he still gets a gig, I have no idea.
Everyone will be happy that they made it to the end of the pod to hear that one.
He's the Jeff George of like 40 years later. The guy's just acknowledged as like the biggest douchebag ever, and he still has teams signing for him in the roster.
Yes. The moment he meets Lewis Rees-Zammit, I'm sure the cameras will be there to picture that. Dear me. Anyway, let's blow the full-time whistle on this slightly different version of Stramash. Thank you very much for listening to these ramblings as we build up to the draft in just over 3 weeks. Although, depending on when Cameron actually gets around to editing this and publishing the podcast, it could be maybe 10 days by the time the draft is on your doorstep. Who will your team draft? Who will your greatest rivals draft and then turn into a bust? We will find out by the end of April. My thanks to Jamie Borthwick and to Ian Stephen for their patience and their insight, especially around the new kickoff rules, which we are sure Gordon will polish up in the next episode. Thank you for listening. Hopefully next time it'll be Cameron and Paul in the hot seat. If not, we'll spin the roulette wheel and one of us will be back to take charge. For now, bye-bye.